This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say, what's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kickoff, you can get it just in time for half time. But I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
The Wednesday Week is sponsored by Michael Constantine Wealth Management. We bet you can't find a financial advisor closer to Hillsborough Stadium.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another TWW Lockdown Live. That was a lot to say. As you can tell, it's early in the morning. We normally do these with a few beers on, but everybody's got their brews ready. And we're all on the caffeine because from the other side of the world, joining us today is Mr. Lloyd Owusu, ladies and gentlemen. He's joining us live on the show. Good morning and good evening to you, sir. I hope you're doing well. Now, you are based in Australia right now, yes?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
I'm going to apologise right from the start about this, that we gave you the nickname the 1 Minute Man, which has different connotations, and you know what I mean? And I thought, you know what, he probably don't like that nickname.
The missus even said it when she saw it. She goes, nah, make sure you tell me she's definitely not a 1 Minute Man.
So join us on today. We've got Vic, Dave, Steve and Holly. My name's Dan, and we're going to go around the room. We're going to ask some various questions about your career, about your time. So normally we have a young kid called Ben. I say young, he's like in his early 20s, but you know, to me he's young. And he normally does his own work. So I'm going to try and dive straight in, and I'm going to go, tell us about the start of your career. Tell us about Slough. Tell us about how it came about to be a footballer.
Yeah. Oh, mate, like you say, obviously every boy's dream to become a professional footballer. With myself, my background was athletics, to be fair. I come from quite an athletic family. My sister, she represented Great Britain at Commonwealth Games, World Championships, etc. And even me, myself, I used to do a bit of athletics, English school boys and everything. But yeah, for me, football was a second love, really. I would say I started playing about when I was about 10, 11, just in my local team. But like I said, again, I wasn't really into it. When I got to about 12, 13, I thought, this is, I like it. You know, when you're a kid, you're seeing things on TV. And back in them days, it was the likes of John Barnes and Ian Rush's of this world. And they were like, that was my team I used to follow. So I used to say to myself, I wish one day I could become a professional footballer. And like I said, through my junior levels, I just carried on playing a bit. Got to about 15 and played for my local team called Crusaders. We had a really good team back in my day in an area called Slough. There was myself, there was a guy called Dean White, who was an exceptional player. He was actually England schoolboy under 16s at the time, and he was a phenomenal player. He used to play in our junior team with us. And like I said, I was playing through there, and then I got an opportunity to go to Crystal Palace back in them days, it was like the centre of excellence. So it was under 15s. So you're in that one step before you go to sort of that YT level. So I went there, and I went there for the year. I mean, I wasn't technically a great player when I was a kid, you know. I was just really, I had real raw pace and strength. So I had 1 year there. I didn't really make the grade. So myself and a friend called Gary Byrne, we never made it. But I never looked back. I just thought, you know, I mean, it's a great experience. Give it a go. And then from there, I just came back to my local town again. And I started playing for Slough Town Youth. And then from there, played for Slough Town Youth for a couple of years. Under 16s, under 17s. And then when I was in the under 18s, started doing quite well, scoring goals. And then from there, I got called up to play some reserve games. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I got called up to play for the first team. And I remember I was 18 And Brian McDermott, the manager at the time, we were in a conference, great level as well. It was a competitive league back in them days. It was back in like 96. The team was flying high, and Brian McDermott said to me, "Lloyd, you're doing well in the reserves. I want to give you a chance in the first team." So I thought, yeah, fair enough, be on the bench and come on maybe. But he goes, "Oh, no, I'm starting you." I was like, oh, wow. So at the time, we had these two great non-league strikers, one called Mark West and one called Gary Abbott. These were like non-league legends they were. And I took Westie's place and I started the game. We played Telford and I scored four on my debut as an 18-year-old. And all of a sudden...
Better than Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, you know, so just from there...
You debut quite well, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I think it's just been a bit of in my career. So from there, it just sort of went from strength to strength. And then from there, a lot of the clubs had heard of this young boy, Lloyd Roos, who scored four goals on his debut. So from there, a lot of pro clubs were coming down to Slough Town watching. But for me, it was just happy to be on the park and scoring goals. So I was in and out of the team, in and out on the bench. Obviously, Brian just wanted to be careful with me as a youngster. Didn't want to put me out there straight away. And then doing well. Then the following season, I signed a two-year contract with Slough Town. I was happy. You know what I mean? £50 a week. And I was, you know what I mean? £10 a goal, I think it was at the time. I was happy. You know, I was at 18, 19 years buzzing. You know, yes, that's your weekend money to go out on a drink. You know what I mean? So from there, started doing well. And then... Slough Town at the time, we ended up, just my second season there, we ended up eighth in the league and we came semi-finals in the FA Trophy. But at that time, the league criteria was you had to have your stadium to a certain level. But at the time, our chairman, he says he believed our stadium was in good enough condition. So he said, "I'm not going to be paying extra money to go into stay in the league." So the league said, "If that's going to be the case, then we're going to have to demote you from the league." So myself and a few of the youngsters, we're like, "Hold on, that's not fair. With this..." All us youngsters want to try and strive to be the best that we can be. And then they actually demoted Slough Town to, even then, it was about even three divisions below. So we're all like, hold on, we've signed contracts for being in the conference. We don't think this is right. And at the time, Brian McDermott said, "Look, listen, boys," to the youngsters, myself, Danny Bolt, Derek Simpson. He said, "Look, I'm going to try and get you youngsters some either opportunities with some professional clubs or some other clubs in the conference just to go on trial or even if they can buy you." So Brian organised for me to go to Walsall. And at the time, they were in league, so the League One of now. So I was like, "Oh wow, I'm a conference player going on trial for a month up to Walsall." I was like, "Wow, this is going to be." I was so nervous, you know. I can imagine 19-year-old going up there. And at the time, there's some good players. If you remember, people like Michael Ricketts, who obviously did well for Bolton many years ago in England, and Clive Platt. There's some good youngsters there and some senior players there as well. So I went up there for the month. 2 weeks into the trial. I was on my way into the training ground and then I get a phone call from Brian and he says, "Oh, Lloyd, where are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just on my way to training." He said, "Listen, I've sold you." I said, "Sold me to where?" He says, "I've sold you to Brentford." I went, "What? Like, as in Brentford in, like, professional Brentford?" He's like, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Look, go into Ray Graydon, who was the manager at Walsall, and say, 'Look, thank you for the opportunity, but you've got an opportunity on the table.'" So I went in to see Ray Graydon and he said to me, "Lloyd, look," he goes, "I've just spoken to Brian." He goes, "Look, we want to look at you for another couple of weeks, but if you've got an opportunity, you've got to take it." So I said, thank you for letting me be here for 2 weeks and then see you later. Anyway, so I drove down at M6, met up with Brian McDermott at Heathrow Airport. Me and him met up with One Nose May, rest in peace, and Ray Lewington, who's the Crystal Palace assistant manager now. So Brentford were on their way to La Manga for a pre-season trip. So at the time, Brian said, "Look, we're going to go and get this deal signed. We sign a pre-contract and then hopefully, look, you can become a professional player." At the time, I had this agent called Lanry. And I swear to this day, mate, the deal never nearly happened as well. I was so angry. So I've called him on my way. I said, "Look, Lanry, we've got to meet Brentford at the airport. And so I need you to come and obviously look at the documentation, blah, blah, blah." So he's come through from Marylebone in London and he's met us at the airport. So we went up to a little cafe. Saw Brian, and then obviously saw One Nodes and Ray Lou, and yeah, this is a contract, 3 year contract. I was like, wow, 3 years. I was buzzing like it was like £350 a week. It was like £1,000 a goal, and I was like, wow, this is like a dream come true. Like, and then Lamy's took the contract, he's picked it up, he's looked at it, he goes, "No," and I looked at him like, "No." He says, "This offer is derisory. My client's not signing this." I'm like, One Nodes goes, "Okay, if you don't want to sign it, we're going." I'm like, "Lanry, I'm signing it." And at the time, I had a mentor called Danny Bailey, who was a player at Slough Town as well, senior player. And he was the one who actually introduced me to Lanry. So I said, "Lanry, I need to speak to Danny." So I called up Danny. I said, "Dan, One Nose is saying there's a deal here on the table. I don't care if it's for £50. I'm going to sign it. You best tell Lanry I'm signing it." So Dan spoke to Lanry, and then Lanry goes, "Oh, if the player wants to sign, he can sign." So in the end, I ended up signing, and then I sacked him off straight off, mate. weren't having it. And then yeah, Brentford went off. The boys went off to La Manga, and I just obviously signed on the dotted line, a pre-contract there. And then the following day, I just went into the training ground to go and have a medical, see the club secretary, just sign the official paperwork. And then my dream of professional career started from there.
Okay, so let's just go into there now. We'll put a break, because obviously we're going to get through the entire thing there, aren't we? So when you mentioned the centre of excellence at Crystal Palace, and then being at Slough, and unfortunately maybe losing your place as a footballer, this seems to be prevalent in the media right now. It's something that they're talking about a lot, about the support for young kids at the time. I mean, we're going back 25 years now. So was there any support for you at all in case all this went to shit?
Yeah, no, Dan, nothing at all, to be fair. Back in them days, like you said, it was not heard of, any support for younger players. So like, as you can imagine then, as a kid, you know, I mean, you get rejected. It's like, oh, sugar, you feel like you've tried to do something and someone's told you and said, no, you're not good enough. But luckily for myself, my family was fantastic, and I had some great friends who were so supportive, you know. They said, Lloyd, you just got to keep believing in yourself and keep just striving to hopefully become what you want to be. And that's what all I did, to be fair. I just used to do extra. I would just be after school, I'd come home just with my neighbour, just be outside, street football. And then after games with Slough Town, I'd just be doing extra again on Sundays. Just always just ticking over to try and get that opportunity to, if it ever comes, I'm ready for that opportunity to come.
I love the idea.
I was going to just go into the back of that, Dan, as well. Lloyd, just obviously, Lloyd, you've told us that you've worked hard at your non-league. You came to football a little bit later on than some folk have came to football. You didn't just get it easy. You went to Palace. You came back away. You got your head down and you worked. And it sounds like Brian McDermott's worked hard to try and get you in to professional football. Did you find any of the non-league peers that you were playing with, either in your team or around about the same sort of league, felt sort of, I don't know, were annoyed that you would be given this opportunity, and there was some sort of resentment that you'd had this opportunity given to you?
No, not at all, to be fair. Like I said, there was four or five of us at the time who were in the sort of same boat, because like we'd all signed two-year contracts. So for ourselves as players, we didn't think it was fair that for us to be playing in the conference now as a 17, 18-year-old, and then all of a sudden you're telling these youngsters, oh, you've got to go and play in the Dr. Martin Div 1. It just weren't fair. So to be fair, Brian actually got, Simo went to Woking, Danny Bolt went to Woking, and another guy went to Bristol City. So we were all lucky enough that Brian sort of really went out of his way to source some trials and actual deals for us youngsters, because I think he knew at the end of the day it weren't fair for us kids who are trying to become professional footballers to not be there, and yeah, gave us the opportunity, and we all ended up going on and having okay careers.
So I'm just trying to think what Brian, you know, there must be an element in the back of your mind of Brian McDermott. I mean, we're talking the Brian McDermott as well, who had a pretty successful career in the championship as well in terms of management. And like, you know, do you feel, because it, you know, the amount of money that you would have generated to move from Slough to Brentford, for example, and you know, your mate to Bristol City and all that, wouldn't have been a life-changing amount of money. It had just been a transference of a contract. So it was actually for him to believe in you as players rather than a sellable asset, as it were.
Yeah, for him. Again, I went for £25,000. Like you say, that's, you know, I mean, peanuts compared to what people go for now. So for him, I think it was just about giving the youngsters who he really knew had some potential to try and give them opportunities to go forward.
And did Slough ever spend that money on that stadium?
No. They got, like I said, they got demoted. They got demoted, and only until recently now they've actually got back into the Ryman, the Conference South, in the last couple of two, 3 years ago. So over these years, it's been in that lower leagues, and obviously now they've worked up, and hopefully they can try and get back up to the likes of the Conference. But my feet's still the record signing, though, so I'm right. So still them years, so I'm still the most expensive sole player. So
yeah, a lot of it, you did all right then, Ian.
Yeah, like, I did all right.
So right, so Brentford, like, they were League One at the time. I mean, this is a huge step up, right?
No, they were League Two. They got relegated. They got relegated to the old Division Three. So Ron Nodes had taken over, so they've got relegated. So his plan. He left Crystal Palace, and then his plan obviously was to come in by Brentford, which he did. And then his plan was obviously to try and get Brentford back up automatically. And what he did was, I think it was a genius stroke, to be fair. What he did, he knew that, obviously money talks, don't get me wrong. So, but with him, it wasn't just all about the money. He just thought, if I can get a cusp of players who all believe in the same philosophy and belief that he did. So what he did, he got some non-league players like myself, Darren Powell, Martin Rodens, Gavin Martin, who were all non-league players for the last couple of years. Then he got some boys who had just been released from Crystal Palace, Danny Boxall, Robert Quinn, who were at the cusp of Crystal Palace first team. And then we had a few boys who were already at Brentford. And then he got one or two top quality players like Herman Ryderson at the time, who was even playing in a top league. And he even came all the way down to that division to play for us. And with that, he synergized all that together. And it was a dream come true, because obviously that year we went up automatically on the last door. We went up last game of the season. It was just a dream come true.
Wow. Steve, go on.
How did you find the step up from playing sort of lower end conference non-league football to going into league football? Was it a massive jump?
Yeah, it was, Steve. And like I said earlier in the piece, like luckily for myself, I had someone like Danny Bailey, who's still to this day is like my mentor and a great guy. Because I always knew I wanted to become a professional footballer, I knew I had to be at a level and be ready. So when I was at the conference at Slough Town, every Sunday after a game, I'd go up to Walthamstow with Danny Bailey and train for 2-3 hours. I'd be going up, we'd be going swimming, bike riding, doing athletics training. Like, I would be doing everything to make sure that if I get an opportunity to become a professional, knowing that these boys train every day, where I'm only training 2 nights a week at Slough Town and a game on a Saturday, I've got to be ready at a level. So I used to do that. And in the summer, he used to take me up to Cyprus. We used to go and do warm weather training there, just in case if that opportunity comes. And luckily for myself, it came to go to Brentford. It came, obviously, massive step, conference, obviously only 2 nights a week, going into a professional environment every day. Was I nervous? Yeah. You know, it's a new norm for me. So it was. But then luckily, again, the team bonding that I had at that club at that time was just phenomenal. The boys who just made us feel so welcomed. And for me, it was all about thinking, yeah, I'm going to go to Brentford, play a couple of games. You know, I was thinking more reserve team players. Just thinking my first year, at least just go in the reserves and just tick over and learn my craft and just try and come off the bench from time to time and build from there. But again, luckily for myself, I ended up playing every single game that season, 56 games and leading goal scorer in the league with 25 goals. So,
yeah, you're quite prolific. I mean, we're looking at like one every 2.5 games, aren't we? Like, you know what I mean? What did you found easy about scoring goals for Brentford? Was it, you know, the people around you, or did you feel like you were an unknown quantity because you'd come from the non-leagues? Because, you know, sometimes you get these pampered footballers that don't like it up them. You know what I mean? So when you're marauding down on centre-backs, or, I mean, what did you feel it was?
I was raw, but I was fearless. But also I had the element of great players, like better players around me who could find me and put me in certain areas. So they would know, because I was so fast when I was a kid, or when I was, 20, 21. They knew if they put a ball over the top for Lloyd Rousseau, he's getting on the back of that. So I was getting on the end of things, great crosses from players, great deliveries. But again, it all come down to my just belief. I just wanted to be the best I could be, and I was just fearless, and I just used to go out and say, every time I'm going to get on that pitch, I'm going to score, and it just happened.
Wow. Now, as it stands right now, we're live on Facebook, and Vic's probably got a question herself. She normally does our admin for us as well, so pick me up, Vic.
Well, the question that I've got on Facebook at the moment, we haven't got that many people live. So
this will go viral later on today.
Yeah. But at the moment, we're on Wednesday-based questions, so I'll hold off on that for a bit. But I just wondered, like, you said that you weren't, like, really into football growing up. Did you support a team? Like, was the...
Yeah, Liverpool. Liverpool was my team. Yeah, my cousin Ernest got me. It's weird being from down south, ended up supporting a team from up north. But, yeah, my cousin Ernest just got me into supporting Liverpool. And like I said before, because of people like John Barnes, and I used to just watch them. I just thought, disgraceful. I used to watch him and Peter Beardsley. I just loved them back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Steve's a bit of a John Barnes fanboy.
he's my man.
Okay, so let's get there then. Let's move on to the Wednesday, because, you know, your career is now on a trajectory going significantly up at this point. Now, you had a number of offers, and you chose Sheffield Wednesday, fortunately for us. Now, one of those offers was another club just down the road, wasn't it?
Well, that was lastminute.com, to be fair. Neil Warnock, bless him, I had already hand-shooken with the gaffer, with Terry Yorov, and I agreed, obviously, I agreed already, but then Neil Warnock phoned me. He said, oh, Lloyd, he goes, I heard that you're obviously a free agent and you're looking to get, and I said, yeah. He said, look, he goes, I'd love to get you a shirt. I said, listen, I said, I would love to, but I've given my hand to Sheffield Wednesday. He goes, oh, he goes, okay, look, fair play to you. I goes, do what you got to do, but he goes, just make sure that when we play you, you don't score against us. we all know what happened there.
Now that's really interesting because, I mean, all right, let's forget right now that we are a Sheffield Wednesday-based show. But at the time, on paper, they had a very good team. There must have been part of you as a footballer, you know, players like Michael Tonga, who you'd have gone, I wouldn't have minded playing in front of him. You know what I mean? Was there ever, I mean, you're allowed to say it, come on now, it's been a number of years, but was there ever an element of doubt where you thought, shit, have I made the wrong decision here?
Nah, not really, because Sheffield Wednesday, you say about United players, when I looked at the Sheffield Wednesday team, unbelievable. When I was going into that change room and I saw players like Trond Solvik, Shefki Kuki, Paul McLaren, who else was there? I mean, we had Gerald Sabon. What a baller. I mean, Craig Arm, there were some top players there.
Yeah, you had some people to get out of the way. To
really drop Craig Armstrong and play a list of people.
You know what I mean?
Very good friend of the show, but I mean,
Kevin Pressman, legendary goalkeeper, you know what I mean? It was, the players were phenomenal, you know? So for me, I didn't think I'd made a bad choice. Because like you said before, I had about five or six clubs I could have chosen. And to be fair, I would have probably liked to have stayed down south, but when Sheffield come knocking as well, I came up there with my advisor at the time, a better advisor, should I say, Leslie. Yeah, so me and him came up to Sheffield, had a look around the place, just looked at it, just thought, wow, you see Hillsborough on TV and FA Cups, you know what I mean, in the semi-finals and stuff in history before, and I just looked around, I was like, wow, this could be the place, and I ended up signing.
You said about Danny Bailey having a lot of influence on your early career, and obviously you've got better representation at this point when you come to Wednesday. Do you still have that tie-in at that point with Danny to say, because obviously it's a bit of a contentious topic at Wednesday about advisors at the moment, but I think it's important that you have got people around you. You said your family were good to you. Yeah. You've got senior pros and representation. Is that all part of your collective thinking when you make that next step?
Yeah, always with me. I've always had that. And like I say, I'm pretty a good character of judge of characters. And like I say, Danny was, again, from the first day he met me, I just knew he was someone I could really trust. Les, again, my advisor then, and obviously mum, dad, sisters, and all my boys back in London. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was a no-brainer. When I spoke to Danny about it, about all the five clubs, we sort of pinpointed who was where. Obviously, don't get me wrong, obviously. And then even financially, to be fair, those other clubs offered me probably more. But I just thought, you know, Sheffield, it's something different. It's up north. I thought, yeah, just give it a go. And yeah, came and signed.
A lot of players that we have normally refer to as the sleeping giant, and it's a massive club and stuff like that. And it's something we, you know, over the last 20 years since you signed, that we don't seem to have kicked on and absolutely pulled at that thread of being this sleeping giant. We are still very much asleep. Does it shock you sometimes?
It does shock me. It shocks me because, like I said, you know what I mean, look, I think even to this day, I think if you look at Hillsborough, I think it might still be in the top 10, like, capacity stadiums in the whole country, I think, you know. I mean, what's 42,000 saying? It's like, unbelievable. It's just a massive, massive club. People don't understand. And like I said, and the fans, top draw. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And we're only top draw when we're winning. You should have seen Twitter yesterday after we lost. Okay, Vic. So look, we're at Sheffield Wednesday now. So let's see what the fans are saying.
So first question, so I just said asleep, we're unconscious more like. did you prefer playing under Terry Orath or Turner?
Now we're getting controversy, aren't we?
Yeah,
now,
look.
The gaffer brought me in. Terry brought me in and he was top draw. I met him and Willie. They were open arms to me. They told me what their vision, their philosophy, what they wanted. Obviously, it didn't go to plan, like we all know. But he was quality. He was real honest with me, and I love managers who are honest. And obviously, you flip it there with Chris Turner. I mean, whether that we can go to that discussion in a minute with how meaning. Look, for me, all my managers I played under, I've got respect when I see him. Don't get me wrong, but with me and Chris at the time, I wasn't too happy. Obviously, Terry had gone. And then Chris had come in, and then I started at the beginning of the season. I remember we played Swindon away. I think I even scored two goals that the first day of the season down in Swindon. And then later on, I remember we played that game. I don't know if you ever remember the game live on Sky against Wickham. We won 2-1. I scored the first one, and then Alan Quinn scored the second. And then on the, that was a Tuesday night, and I think on the Saturday we played Burnley at home and we lost. I was dropped. So I was like, hold on, I had a great game on the Tuesday night, I wasn't even playing. So he brought us all in on the Sunday and to train. And I thought, you know what? So I'm going to go and chat to the gaffer. I want to go and speak to him to say why I weren't playing. So he called me up. I went up to his office. He goes, I'll come in, Lloyd. So him and Colin West were sitting there. And I said, I just want to touch base. Why weren't I playing yesterday? So I don't know if it was premeditated or something, but he got a piece of paper out under the table. So, I mean, at the time, I couldn't see whether there was anything on the paper. I don't know. But then he goes, oh, this is why you didn't play yesterday. You're not fit enough. You don't score enough goals. You don't create enough opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow. So I just lost my head. So I was like, I couldn't believe it. I just literally just lost my head. So I was like, Matt, I said to him, I'm not having that, mate. I said, look, it is what it is. At the end of the day, as a striker, when you're five and you're doing well, I feel like you should be playing the next game. I mean, no one's ever entitled to play. But at that time, I've come off a high. You've just scored a goal. You've played well. So you're surely going to keep that same winning team anyway. And he didn't do that. And then I just lost my head. So I went into training in the morning, about 10 o'clock. And I went out. I just lost my head. I just started smashing everyone in training. And then after the training session, he looked over to me and goes, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I wanted to see. That's what I want to see you in game. So I think he was trying to get a reaction out of me. So ever since that day, we sort of we didn't kept see eye to eye too much. And obviously I ended up leaving to go on loan. And then that was that. So, but look, at the end, I still got respect for him when I see him or speak to him from time to time. So yeah, that was that at the time, but I wasn't too happy, but it's life.
Mm-hmm. You talked about Terry Yorath. Obviously, he was the guy that brought you in. We've had, I'd say, nearly 20 ex-pros, ex-Wednesday players in on the pod. We've not had anybody really talk about Yorath. What was he like as a coach?
Yeah, to be fair, he was more man management. Willie used to do most of the sessions. You know, you get that many times anyway. You would get a senior manager and then you just get his assistant who does the sessions. The gaffer was more reserved. He would just be obviously observing stuff on the sides. From time to time, don't get me wrong, he would come in and give his piece, but Willie would take the most of the chunk of the session, and then when we got to the sort of cusp of the bit of the shape and what he wanted, then he would come in and do that. But he was a cool guy for me. I liked him. Again, like I said to you before, he was open, transparent, and that's what I expect from a manager player relationship. So I liked him, full stop.
So, what do you think went wrong with him?
It was tough. Look, for me personally, looking when I look over all these years, there was a lot of egos there. Obviously, like I said, I come from the lower end. So for me, it was just a dream come true to come to such a big club. And did he lose a change room because we had some real big players? Look, if you look at the, like I said, them players like Trondon, they'd all just come from the Prem, just been relegated from the Prem. So all these boys, no disrespect at the time, they were on massive, massive money. And they're in league, they're in the championship now. Their money hadn't gone down. So for them, it was just go through them. They just keep ticking over, not really bothered, because at the end of the day, they're still getting their paid dollar every week. So I felt when I look back at it now, I feel like a lot of the players weren't really bothered and they didn't really buy into him and they just weren't giving him that real respect that's my vision from how I look at it now.
I feel that's a great point, actually. So there was a point where we as Wednesday fans, we just got relegated out of the Premier League. We looked around at this league and went, we're going to piss this, lads. We'll be fine. Mm. You know what I mean? And then we didn't. And then we didn't again. And then it's been 20 years of not pissing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But you're right. We still had some big contracts in there. And there was a few players that you could accuse of phoning it in somewhat.
Yeah.
Somehow, Gerald Seaborn went from being a very average Premier League striker to one of the top Championship strikers. It seemed to work the other way for him. But you were right. Is there a level of resentment towards some of these players for... You know, your career's on the way up here, you know. You're playing in front of 40,000 people at this derby. Yeah. You know, you're thinking, shit, like, this is great for me. And you're looking at players like Trondegil Saltberg going, this is shit, this, isn't it? No.
Yeah, and you're right. And that's in a way, when I look at it now, that's how it sort of went. Like you say, I'm coming there to try and improve my career and obviously try and get to that promised land again, with Sheffield Wednesday. But again, you've got the players I just felt like they weren't bothered. They were happy to pick up their paycheck, knowing they were maybe had another year or two. And obviously, because they were getting older, they were happy days getting their pay, and that was it. So I was gutted, really. But again, like, that's football, that's life, it happens, you just got to get on with it.
Chris Turner is remembered as one of those managers that pressed the restart button in the club. And unfortunately for yourself, you were on the wrong side of that. You know what I mean? You were at the club already and not one of the players that... Because, like, if you look at, you know, Quinn, Geary, Bromby, they all went to go and play for the other side of Sheffield. Yep. Now, were you surprised at that? Because essentially, that was a big FU to deliver to the club a little bit, because I bet they thought their shit didn't stink at the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, bless it. At the end of the day, look, as much as I know from a fan's perspective, you look at players going, oh, why would you go? You're at Sheffield Wednesday, you're going to United. It's a bit of a no-no. It's a bit of a no-man's land. But at the end of the day, players got to look out for themselves. Mm-hmm. They've got to look out for their own families and fortunes, you know? And like I say, we were all sort of Terry Yovers boys. And it happens in football. New gaffers come in. They might not like the way certain people are around the way. So they sort of usher you out. And that's what sort of happened with the majority of us, you know? So it is what it was. He came in, he didn't like X, Y, Z. He wanted to bring in his own players, which is understandably, he has his own philosophy and his brand of football. But then again, the club struggled, unfortunately, still.
Okay, so let's get to it then. We're halfway through. Let's get to the big game. Let's get to the day when you became a Sheffield Wednesday legend. Now, I'll not lie, I was 21 at the time, and my memory of the day is quite hazy, but I remember it gave me the best hangover or worst hangover I've ever had in my life. Tell us about the day from start to finish.
You know what? I'll have to rewind it back a bit, because obviously when I signed for Sheffield, I was actually injured. After the playoff final for Brentford against Stoke, I had done my knee before in the final for Brentford. So I was having a meniscus operation, and all the clubs I went to, they all knew. So they were all happy even still to sign me, because they knew we had enough pre-season to build to get through anyway. So I signed for Wednesday in the end, had the operation, but I knew I wasn't going to be ready for like the start of the season. But while I was doing my rehab, I had a dream on a Sunday night that I'm going to make my debut against Sheffield United and come on and score. So I've gone in the change room. I remember I was in the gym pumping some weights, and Quinny was in there, Macca, Paul McLaren, Derek. I said to them, boys, you ain't going to believe it. I had a dream that I'm going to come on against Sheffield United and score my first touch. They're going, shut up, Lloyd, shut up. What are you on about? I said, no, honestly. So that was it. Obviously, maybe 3-4 weeks, obviously, into it now, getting my rehab, a couple of reserve games. The big day comes down September the 1st. But obviously, the day before, the gaffer's named the team. But then he hadn't named the subs yet. He still hadn't named the subs. But then late, he whispered to me, Lloyd, you're going to be on the bench tomorrow. So I was like, oh, just to be wicked, just fantastic. But in my thought process, I was thinking, I had that dream, you know. So I was on the bench. But my recollection, I remember at home, I remember leaving my house, driving to Hillsborough, and then you just see the wave of fans. It was just like, this is proper, man. This is like, you know what I mean? It's what you see on the TV, the big derby. Got to the ground, all the fans outside, sign autographs, we've gone through. Obviously, we've gone warm up. And then, obviously, game kicks off. We're quite comfortable in the game. The game was like hit and miss, back and forth. I remember it. They had quite a few good chances, to be fair. I mean, I remember, Alan McCall had a few chances, Tongi and them lot. So, yeah, and then Kev had a great game. And then later on, warming up along the touch lines, Gaffer said, yeah, Lloydy, come back. So I think it was 72nd minute or whenever it was. He says, we're going on. So I was just buzzing, man, just in my head, just thinking, yeah, just get on that Hillsborough turf. And then, on that pitch, come on. I remember I gave Yatesy a little nudge. So gave him a nudge in the chest to let him know, I'm about, mate. Woosie's about. And then, I remember the ball getting played at the back. Quinny, Lee Bromby played it to someone. And then he's played a big diagonal across to Shefty, I think. He's laid it down to Leon Knight. I remember Leon Knight zinging it across the back stick to Ashley Westwood. And I think Westy heads it on. Westy then to Craig, and then Shefty hits the post, and I'm just the crossbar, and I'm just there in the 6-yard box, drops down. I was like, bang! And then I couldn't believe it. So I've run off. And if you look at the celebration again, if you actually look at the celebration, you actually see me, Quinny and Mac are straight. I'm saying, what did I effing tell you? What did I effing tell you? And then it was just like, wow, man, I just couldn't believe it. It was just like Word of Rovers stuff, man. It was just a dream come true.
Thinking about it, that is all of our absolute dreams, to come on in a Sheffield derby to score with your first touch in front of the cop, wearing the Chupa Chup shirt. I mean, what more do you want from life?
I have to tell you, Lloyd, I watched most of, I didn't even watch it. I don't know if when you were sat on the bench and you were watching it, you were thinking, I've signed for the wrong club here, because that first half, I sat hiding behind my hands. It was so awful. We sit on the front of the cop, and I dared to peek out when Coochie had that shot. And it was like in slow motion, and then it hit the bar, and then in slow motion, I panned across and saw you. And I just like, I think my gasp drew it back into the goal. I think I'm one touch of woozo. I saw it. Couldn't believe it. And then, like I say.
I tell you what's interesting about that, though, Lloyd, telling that story. You've just named that we had three strikers on the pitch at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I can't think of a time when Sheffield Wednesday were that attacking. You know what I mean? That's shocking in itself. So, you know, at that point, like, you know, you're in your early 20s. At this point, I'd have been like, I am unstoppable right now. I mean, obviously, as I've got older playing Sunday League football, you know, I'd have scored that goal and then gone, yes, Gaffer. Yes, please. I've peaked here now. I'm never going to get there again. You know what I mean? Steve, pick me up.
So, obviously, coming out of that game, going into sort of the rest of the season, what was the sort of feeling around the club? Obviously, you're in. We've talked about the dynamics of the squad and what have you, but did we feel like we were going to kick on from there?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was a mess because it was a game. Obviously, we hadn't started the best. And then with that game, we thought, you know what I mean, it's a great game to sort of to get the wheels turning even more. And obviously, yeah, we won that game 2-0. And then, I mean, I can't remember who we played after, but we were very inconsistent. And then obviously from there, it was a bit too much inconsistent. And that's when obviously the gaffer, unfortunately, got the tic-tac. And then obviously Chris come in. So yeah, it was unfortunate, but it was what it was.
Dan, if I just push on that, I don't mean to kind of bring you down here, Lloyd, for obviously what you achieved with Wednesday, but we can see what your scoring record was when you were with Brentford and with Slough, and Dan kind of alluded to sort of 1-2, 1-3. You came to Wednesday, it didn't work out the way ultimately that you'd have wanted it to. And I'm quite interested because we've talked a lot on the podcast about sort of mental health and keeping yourself in the right frame of mind. Just obviously going through lockdown and what have you, but when you're a professional footballer and you have expectations and you have belief in yourself, and like you said at Brentford, you were raw, you just thought you'd get about it. Do you start to question, maybe not your own ability, but as to why you can't replicate and do what you know you're capable of doing? And I think it's quite interesting at that time where you'd have been comparing how you were and how you expected the move to go, because we've got strikers now like Jordan Rhodes who have clear ability but aren't able to replicate what they once did. How do you personally deal with that challenge to yourself and stay out of your own mind and keep positive?
Fucking hell, mate. That's a good question, isn't it? Bloody hell. Normally we just do knob gags and tell stories about hitting each other with flip-flops and flicking each other's towels on the ass. Bloody hell.
Oh, for about 4 weeks.
What's the question again?
Are you all right?
Yeah, to be fair, you're right. I mean, like back in them days, when you talk about mental health, there was non-existent, you know. So it's a great question, to be fair. For me at the time, look, I thought I'm going to do what I want to do, and that's obviously I'm a goal scorer. And like you said, it didn't really materialise for me at Wednesday. Was that because I'm not good enough? You sometimes think to yourself, oh, am I not good enough? But then on the flip side, I know what I can do. It's about getting given the opportunity. And no disrespect, at the time, it was a dynamics with me at the time with a manager. And when I look back at it, it was so inconsistent. I was in, out. And as a player, you're thinking, what else can you do? You try and do your best. You try and do your extras. But if someone just doesn't like you as a player or a person, there's not much you can do as a player. It's the gaffer at the end of the day. He's the one who's going to pick the team. So for me, I never really thought I'm a bad player. It's just the dynamics between myself and the manager who wasn't giving me the opportunity to do what I knew what I could do. So that's how I look at it.
Have we got any more on Facebook, Vic?
Please can you start dreaming that Wednesday accrue some points would be Ernest has said, I remember that game. I think he's talking about the derby. Did you collapse after scoring?
Nah. So that's to do with all my puking stuff, isn't it? Probably because obviously again when we talk about when I look back now, because if you remember I puked up on the pitch. Not many people probably know that what actually happened physically on the pitch, but actually puked up on the pitch. And when I look back at it now, and I'm not ashamed to talk about it now, I think it was down to obviously anxiety and nerves, because all of a sudden I'm I'm playing in front of 3,000-4,000 at Brentford week in and week out, and then all of a sudden I'm playing in front of 40,000 in a derby. It was just a norm. It was just new to me, and then all of a sudden, I just puked up. But and then from there, each for a couple of weeks, it started happening all the time. We were and the club was getting quite concerned, to be fair, because. But then when I look back at it now, it was nerves, it was anxiety. But no one, again, back in our days, no one knew, no one spoke about it. But then after that, over the years, I started to do it still. But then in the end, it actually became a habit, where actually became a habit of me actually puking up before a game, and that wasn't because of nerves and anxiety, just something that made me feel really released, and just made me feel free. And even then, I've done it 15 years later after. So, yeah, but it's weird. It's like I said, I'm glad nowadays players are getting everything from the PFA, from mental health associations to help these younger players and players in general, where we obviously at our time, we didn't get that. So happy that players are getting it now.
That is fascinating, actually, because yeah. That's one of the things that when I've told people that you're coming on, when I told these guys, and that's the first things that people ask about are obviously the Derby goal. Was it asthma? Was it this? Was it that? Because there were so many, and I've Googled, like my Google history is like Lloyd Owusu asthma, Lloyd Owusu vomit.
Yeah.
Lloyd,
even I am asthmatic. I am asthmatic.
Find out.
Yeah. But then also the club thought, because even then we had tests. I went to the hospital. I've had my tonsils taken out for it just to see. But again, when I look back, it was nervous and anxiety.
I suffer from it myself as well. The vomited thing, but I do it the other way, and you're right. It's something that's with your head, isn't it? I remember, and I tell you what it is. It's Yorkshire teachers that gave it to me, and I remember I was like 10 years old, and I know we're interviewing you, but I'm going to tell you this story. We were about 10 years old, and I remember I was trying to explain to this teacher that this kid had done something, and it weren't me. You know what I mean? And they just kept saying, "Stop, I'm talking. Stop, I'm talking," and this teacher wouldn't listen to me. So I was just sick. I just literally just vomited down myself. And it happens now. You know, like there's been in situations where I've been at work or, you know what I mean, or I've been trying to talk to a member of staff or something like that. And if I'm not being listened to, I get so frustrated. I just vomit down myself. Yeah. Like it's a really weird thing. So I completely understand that the two, in terms of your mental health and your physical, can actually intertwine at some point.
Yeah.
Although sure. it does make a messy back teeth. Now
I was a little bit concerned, Dan. When Dan, you said that you do it the other way. When you said I'm sick, but I do it the other way. Right?
Remind me never to argue with you face to face. You're standing shit yourself.
It happens. Now I'm going to embarrass Holly now because I want her to show you the back of her shirt.
Yep.
Don't embarrass me. I'm all about it.
Proud about it. She's proud about it.
That's the one, now, man. Love that.
The reason I'm pointing that out is the size of the fan base and playing in front of Sheffield Wednesday and, you know, meeting people in Meadowhall and some of the things they'd say to you and stuff like that. I mean, you must have had an element of it at Brentford, of course, but...
Yeah, you did. I mean, obviously, being in a London club, I mean, we were only a small London club back in them days. Luckily for myself, I was quite successful. And I was also a DJ as well. So in the London scene, I was quite well known. But coming up to Sheffield, it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Obviously, one score in the goal, my first touch, and then never having to buy a drink in the town ever.
You've got the keys to the city in one half.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But like you said, I'd go out in the evenings to with some of the boys to bars and clubs and out to Meadow Hall, and like you just get the fans would always be like, at first you'd be seeing people looking at. It's a Owusu, isn't it? And or whoever I was with, like me, when I was with Leon Knight or Macca, you know what I mean? The fans were unbelievable. They would always want to talk to you. And for me, that's prime. I mean, at the end of the day, I always say, without the fans, us footballers are nothing, you know? So I always used to give my time and day to fans and everyone and sign autographs and everything. But the fan base was just tremendous, top fans.
I must admit, it's one thing that, you know, it's great when it's going well. I bet it's amazing. But when it, you know, when it's falling to shit sometimes, I can't imagine being on that pitch in that cauldron, as it were.
I even experienced it a bit. I mean, I remember being on the sidelines when I was on the bench a few times and when we were sort of struggling, you know what I mean? And I mean, you do feel the pressure and the fans could be hardcore, you know, because they're so passionate and blessed them to be. you did feel the tension when things weren't going our way, results weren't going. You felt it really hard on the players. It was tough. It was tough.
That's
at time.
That's Holly and her dad at the front of the cop turning it.
I had just love for Lloyd of Owusu. Me, I had nothing bad to say.
I can't believe that 18 years later you're still wearing a shirt that you wore at like 14 Fantastic. Years old. You're like the smallest person.
The 2000 shirts were differently sized.
A bit big.
I think the thing is, Lloyd, that season, that your first season at Wednesday, was so bizarre because everything was going fine. And then there was just this point that everything went to shit. I think, was it? Hold on. I'm not going to lie. I'm going back here.
20 years.
Like Millwall was the last game that we lost. And then it was a few draws. And then everything like suddenly picked up again, and there was like the 7-2, 7-2, 7-1 against Burnley. I remember I was fuming about that game, absolutely fuming. And then obviously you scored in the last game of the season, but that must have been, how do you keep going knowing that everything's already finished? You know what I mean? How does a team walk away? Like, because I went to Brighton, and that was that was not a good day out. That was not a good time to Skype school. It wasn't great. And then you come back, and I know obviously you were on the bench at the 7-2 game, but that's just like torture for fans, isn't it? Like, how do you pick yourselves up and suddenly win 7-2 at home?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's football. You've got to, you're paid to do a job. I mean, you can't sulk. You just got to get on, even though we knew we were relegated already. You've got to get up and pick yourselves up and just keep playing. And I mean, me personally, that's just the way I've been brought up and raised, and my character is just to keep going. You can't sulk. You just got to keep working hard and try and strive to be the best you can and try and work your way back up.
Yeah, I think that was just such a bizarre season for everybody involved. It just felt like, to be honest, the form then was better than what we're doing at the moment. It was a lot of draws, wasn't it, as far as I remember. I went to like literally every game that season, and yeah, it wasn't fun. But like the last match of the season then, so obviously we were playing Walsall, you scored. What was that like to know your last game of the season, you're at Hillsborough, you've just scored, but you're still going to go around and applaud the fans, and it's not a lap of honour, it's a lap of appreciation. But of course. I would just feel, I don't know how I would feel about that from a mental health point of view again, and just in general as a professional. Did you just think, what am I applauding? Like, was there like a feel of guilt in the team? Or not on you personally, but...
Yeah, of course, you do it I believe as a player, you should feel guilty in regards to, at the end of the day, shows that in a way we weren't good enough to stay up. And then obviously fans are there to pay their money, and we weren't good enough to stay up as players for the club. But reason why I was, me personally, I appreciate the fans. Regardless of what happened, you have to appreciate the fans, because like I said, without the fans, us players are nothing. We're nothing. They're the ones who pay our wages at the end of the day. So you've got to give them everything and show them respect. And like I say, fair play to the fans. I remember that day, they still applaud us, because I think certain players, they knew that certain players still gave it their all. Even though they were down and out, they still knew that certain players gave it their all. And I'm not just saying just for myself. I know I've always been a player in my career, no matter where I've gone, 110%, regardless of what's happened, whichever situation's happened, I've always given 110%. And I think I can honestly say that any club I've been to, any fan can say, Lloyd Owusu does that. He's done that, and it's there in the record to say that he's done that. So, yeah.
That was the frustrating thing about that season. It wasn't actually that bad, and there weren't any particularly bad performances individually or anything like that. It just didn't seem to go Wednesday's way. But just FYI, in case anyone's watching, I didn't sky of school. I absolutely had a migraine on my way down to Brighton. We've got a couple of questions on Facebook, Lloyd. Yep. What did you know about Sheffield Wednesday before you signed for us?
Oh, again, like I said, for me, you know about the history, especially with the FA Cup games that I always played there back in the days in the semi-finals and everything at Hillsborough. So you always knew that and seen it on TV. As a city itself, didn't know too much about it. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, being a Southerner, you know. And then player-wise, I knew a few players. Obviously, people like Paul McLaren at the time, because he had been at Luton prior, and so I knew him from playing against him. And Leon Knight being in London, I knew him. I knew he was coming up on loan there. So Yeah, I didn't really know too much about the club as a whole, but only just from the outside aspects of seeing it on the FA Cup games, etc. in the past.
And one more question. Annette says she'd like to know about the social side of the team, nights out and characters, etc.
Oh, mate. To me, for now, there was a dynamic, because, like I said, at the time, there was a dynamic, because you had the boys, obviously, they just got been relegated from the Prem. You had the big boys, the Trons, the Sabons, all on the big, big money. Then you had the cusp of the Alan Quinns and Gearys and Lee Bromleys come through the youth and been there. And then you had a sort of that sort of boys who'd come from League One, League Two. So there was a real mix of players. So that, as much as I'm not nice to say, there wasn't that much synergy at first, because there was three different sort of areas in the change room. So it was quite a different dynamic. But we got along. Everyone, don't get me wrong, everyone got along in the end. And we had some great team nights out and good bonding, and no one was really an arse to anyone, to be fair. I must admit, with them boys, no one's really an arse though to each other, where in certain places like in the past I've been, yeah. But everyone did get along, but there was a different dynamic. There wasn't the synergy at first wasn't, I think because of the mentality of we've been relegated and people just want to pick up their money. But overall, not a bad bunch.
Do you have any night out stories? I mean, you can drop Craig in it, to be fair, because he's probably tuning in now, because I have texted him and said, mate, that you just dropped him in. It's a great player.
Oh, mate, Craig never used to go out. No, Craig, he liked it. He was a good lad. He was good. Man, look, we had a few Christmas nights out and stuff, and obviously a few pre-season trips away, and we were out and about. So we used to go to Leeds quite a lot, because it was only up the road. It was a bit better nightlife than Sheffield to a certain extent. So, yeah, we had a few of them. We had a great one out. I remember we had a good one in Newcastle. Great Christmas trip in Newcastle. So, yeah, we had some good times and some few good drinks as well. But it was all safe and pleasant, though.
Oh, yeah. One of them. Go on, Holly.
I was just going to say, Vic mentioned that things weren't going our way, which is very much similar to right now. And Wednesday fans can be a bit dramatic when things aren't going our way. Did you find...
Holly, you're the cheerleader of that. Come on, stop being modest.
We can be quite, I don't know what the word is.
Horrible.
Horrible, yeah. Did you find Brentford or Reading fans more forgiving than Wednesday fans in the seasons when you were here and it wasn't going well? Could you...
Yeah, definitely. The Wednesday fans, like I said, at times when things weren't going well, they would let you know. They would let you know where other clubs have been to, even though things were a bit more different. I guess whether is it a northern thing, and just such a desire for football. You know what I mean? It's just that's all you live and breathe. You're home from your work 9 to 5, and you just want to go out at the weekend and watch a good game of football. So that's what they live and breathe. So I did experience that. To a certain extent, a bit more hardcore with the Sheffield Wednesday fans.
Was it personal? Did people say things to you personally? Because I'll sit there and I will moan in the stand or whatever else. I'll say things, but I would never dream of going up to someone in the street. I mean, I've said things to Dave Allen from a distance, but I would never dream of going up to somebody and say, like, the horrendous stuff that I know,
like
Craig, for example.
Yeah. Actually, you say that, Vic, because I remember there was a time I was warming up, and I didn't actually physically hear it, to be fair. Apparently, there was a couple of two fans, apparently, at the side. They were even giving some racial abuse to me. I never actually heard it. And some other fans actually called them out, and they actually end up getting a lifetime ban, I believe, back in them days. So, there was a bit of that, but, I mean, I didn't hear it. So glad that the club and people around them dealt with it. So, yeah, you get some people, you do get some idiots, but I guess it's part and parcel of life, isn't it, sometimes?
Do you feel that we have an apathy for that type of behaviour in the football world completely? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, back 20 years, 25 years, there's an element of you kind of have to shrug your shoulders and go, that's what football fans are like. I mean, obviously now the last couple of years, and you know, the last year especially, it's really come to fruition, and it's really come to the fore. You know, this must be something that means something to you, like really, you know, hits home with you. Did you suffer any abuse like that?
Luckily for me, as much as I didn't as much, when you think back all back in them times, you would have thought you heard other players got quite a lot of racial abuse. I actually didn't get too much at all. The odd little one here and there. If anything, it was mostly sometimes on the pitch. If anything, from certain players. I remember when I was at Brentford and we played, I think it was Notts County, and there was a corner. And I remember the goalkeeper, my position at the time was I had to block the goalkeeper. I remember making monkey chants.
Fucking and hell.
Then the next corner, I think I scored. So I just went up to him and went like that. You know, I mean, shut him up, things like that. But such luckily for myself, I didn't get that much racial abuse in my career.
Well, I was just going to ask. Obviously, your sort of the main part of your career was with Brentford, and Fudge's touched on the coming to the fore of the sort of the Black Lives Matter movement and taking the knee. And Brentford have obviously come out, and I don't want to put you on the spot necessarily, but Brentford have come out and made a sort of a stance that they're not going to take the knee. Have any feelings, emotions, thoughts on that?
No, I haven't really. At the end of the day, it's up to the individual, up to the club, what they want to do. If it's a great initiative, what was happening. I think everyone's seen it now, so everyone knows about it. Do they need to continue to do it? Yes, no, totally up to them. Totally up to them, you know what I mean? So I can't. It's not something that I can really comment on too much, you know, but if they want to do it, they do it. If they don't, they don't.
Okay. Let's move on then to your departure from Sheffield Wednesday, because I can imagine you being a bit pissed off about it, especially before and since. Your goal to game ratio is significantly better than what it was at Sheffield Wednesday, and I assume because Chris Turner reduced your playing time, you know, you were fighting up against Seaborn, Coochie, even Leon Knight to an extent, you know what I mean? So, you know, your Kim place Olsen. In the queue would have fluctuated. Yeah. So
because it was actually funny how I left in a way, because what happened was we actually played Brighton away, and I was on the bench again, and obviously I've got a great relationship with Steve Coppell, and he called me in his office when we got there. You know, you just get you normally say hello to the old gaffers, whoever you see, old teammates. So he goes, "Oh, Lloyd, what's going on with you?" I said, "Oh, I'm just not playing, gaffer." He went, "Oh, would you want to come on loan here, maybe?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Mate, if I can come on loan down south, we're going to be buzzing." So he goes, "Let me touch base with you Monday." So I kept it hush hush, and then on Sunday.
But that journey back from Brighton, I bet you were giddy as anything.
In my head, I was like, "Oh man, I could be going on loan to Brighton." So anyway, I went to training. I thought, you know what, I've got to let it out. So I went into the change rooms all boast. I was like, "Yeah, man, boys, I'm going to be off to Brighton. I'm going to be off.
Get it out of here. I'm off, lads.
Get out." So anyway, next thing, one of the boys comes running in and goes, "Boys, you seen Sky Sports News?" And then everyone's going, "No, what's happened?" He goes, "Steve Coppell's gone to Reading." I was like, "Oh my God. If me folks, I'm going to Brighton. I think I'm going to Brighton alone, and he's gone to Reading." I thought, "F this." I was like, "Oh, damn, I've got to stay here now." So anyway, another month gone in. And obviously, I think it was about October time, October, November. And I was like, "Friggin', I've got to stay here now still." So I'm in and out of the team. But then I get a phone call in December.
You all feel like that.
Yeah.
I get a phone call in December. "Lloyd, Steve Coppell here." "Is that you, gaffer?" Goes, "I want you to come along to Reading." I said, "Serious, gaffer?" I was like, "Serious." He goes, "Yes." He goes, "Brian McDermott's going to give you a call and we'll get it all sorted." And I was like, "Couldn't." And now this time I was buzzing because I knew physically he's at Reading. He's called me personally to say, "Look, he wants me there." And then I remember Brian
just make sure you stay there till tomorrow.
And then to be fair, yeah, but they already sorted out with the club secretary at Wednesday. And I remember the secretary said, "Lloyd, you're going on loan to. And I was buzzing because at the end of the day, Reading was in the Championship and we were in League One at the time. So luckily for myself, I got to move back to the Championship on loan. So even though it was only a loan move at first and obviously turned into a permanent, I was actually buzzing. I mean, I was sad to leave Sheffield because I loved Sheffield as a place as a whole. You know, back at the end of the day, it was all about myself and playing football. And I even ended up taking a pay cut going to Reading from Sheffield Wednesday. So for me, it wasn't even about the money. It was just about making sure I can try and be the best I can, play at the best level I can and keep playing football. So yeah, that's the way I end up leaving Sheffield. So I didn't really get a chance to really even see a lot of the fans because I went on loan and then the loan rolled into an automatic 2.5-year permanent. So I didn't really get a chance to see all the Wednesday fans and even my teammates to a certain extent. So that was a bit upsetting. But yeah, over the years, even via Twitter and everything, you know what I mean? Wednesday fans have a great relationship with them on there. And so, yeah, I'm blessed and happy that they still support me.
I don't think I'd worry about that. You scored with your first touch in a derby. That was it, you know. Instant Wednesday legend, like, you know.
Cheers, thank you.
Okay, so we're into the last couple of minutes. Does anybody else have any other questions before we wrap this up?
What are you up to now?
Leaning forward, you know he's coming.
He's in. Yeah, so, obviously now I'm here in Australia, Sydney. I've been here since nearly 10 years now. Obviously, I came out here to play back in 2009 and then I emigrated in 2012. And, been here ever since. Only last month, Australia Day, I've done my ceremony, Australian ceremony. So I've got my Australia passport now, or I've got to apply for it. So I'm an Aussie citizen now, which is good as well. But, I'm coaching. I'm still in the world of football with coaching. Coaching was always on my forefront after finishing playing. I always love giving back to the younger generation. And I'm at one of the top private schools in the country called Cranbrook, where I'm the first 11 head coach for the senior team. And then I'm the general duty master. So I'm in charge of all the discipline at the school. So I work alongside the house masters and the director of students, and then just maintaining the boys' attitudes and just making sure they're not being dicks around the school.
Is that the school motto?
Yeah, don't be a dick.
That's the most Australian thing ever.
Have you got any jobs going?
I'm just saying it's
a great role for me. And reason being, because I've been in that environment of professional football all my life, you know, it is, as a footballer, you have to be disciplined, you know, one to succeed and be a good person. And luckily for myself, I had that in abundance growing up from my family upbringings, from my mum and dad, and obviously my sisters and all my mates. But going into the school environment now, I can give something back to the kids. And like I said, this school is one of the richest schools in the country. It's equivalent of Eton, you know. It's like creme de la creme. Like, this is the kind of wealth we're at my school. Like, we've got the people like the Packers, Justin Hemses, Russell Crowe's kids are there, Nicole Kidd, like top creme de la creme. So like, these kids are very, very, very privileged and entitled.
You're telling them off.
And that's why, to be fair, the school, they love what I do, because I give them a sense of realness, you know. It's not all about how much money you earn. At the end of the day, for me, you've got to be a good person first, regardless of how much money you earn. If you're a good person, that gets you halfway through in life. And I just try and instill that in all the, because it's a boys' school as well, so I just try and instill that into the boys. And it's all about building relationships, really. And once you build relationships with the boys, my job's easy. It's really easy.
Go on, Vic. Holly, sorry.
You sort of answered it a bit there. You mentioned a few different times that you took a move for your career and the experience rather than the money. And I wondered whether that was something that's lost with the amount of money that's in football at the moment, even quite lower down, not just Premier League, it goes quite far down now. Yeah. And if that's something that you make a point of passing on to the kids at your school, but I guess it wouldn't matter if they already have quite a lot.
But too much, but yeah, like you say, it's not about it. For me in life, it's all good. Everyone wants to be comfortable, don't get me wrong, but you've just got to work hard to become comfortable, and two, you've got to be a good person.
Amazing. Lloyd, thank you so much for joining us this evening, morning/morning. If you're watching this in the future, I will have had a nap if you want to ask us any questions later on. Don't forget to join us again on Thursday. Who have we got on Thursday, Vic?
Terry Curran.
Terry Curran's joining us on Thursday. So thanks all for joining us on the Wednesday week. Vic, take us off Facebook.
Cheers, guys.
How do I stop recording?
The Wednesday week is sponsored by Michael Constantine Wealth Management. We bet you can't find a financial advisor closer to Hillsborough Stadium.
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing ready to go. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points back of the net. Le Bosch. Ultimate delivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.